Can you not use your mouse during this, or do you have to use your
mouse? I'm very mouse dependent.
Let me see it.
No, don't touch
it.
Let
me just see it.
Okay.
Okay. It's really nice mouse.
Oh, everyone, welcome to today's episode of Behind the Science. I am Joe, and I'm here with...
Oh, that's me. I'm Liz.
And in this episode of Behind the Science, we're going to talk to you today about... We're doing actually a whole series all year about... So you want to start a sign shop. So we're kind of hoping all the podcasts this year sort of cover the whole process from getting started in the sign industry to choosing a brand, choosing your audience, and scaling your business, marketing, sales, buying equipment, maybe even all the way to the end. And how do you get yourself ready for an exit? So hopefully this series will be really helpful this year.
Yeah. We've already had the pleasure of interviewing Mike, who Mike Stevens, in our last podcast. If you haven't watched it, please do. He's got such great insight, from starting sweeping floors to owning a full fabrication installation shop. We're so proud of him, but his story is great and so inspiring and so helpful.
Yes.
Has a lot of good tidbits in there. And now this is just kind of our take on how we both started our sign company. And then next month we'll move to the next topic, which is
branding.
Yeah. Yes. And then it'll grow from there, like Joe said.
So anyway, well, we're happy to be with you guys today. Before we get started, wanted to just take a minute to thank our sponsors.
Thank you.
That's true. Thank you. We want to thank Inktavo for all of the support that they give to this podcast, Behind the Signs. Inktavo brings you Sign Tracker, Printavo, Inksoft, and Graphics Flow, and also now Clarity. So if you're watching from the UK, you should check out Clarity. It's a great project management tool for sign shops based in the UK. It's European based. So in any case, check it out. They're a great crew. I've gotten to know them a little bit. I keep trying to work on my English accent to convince them that I should do trade shows over there with them.
No, don't do that.
Anyway, thank you very much to our sponsor, Inktavo. Check out all the products on Inktavo.com, and you'll learn more, and there's links to Sign Tracker and everything else there too. So,
More importantly, thanks to you guys. Thanks for watching us.
Yes, for sure.
Just sitting here talking shit with each other. It's really fun.
Yeah.
We appreciate you.
We do. And we love the sign industry, and we love you guys, and know that you're out there working really hard. I'm convinced
that... We love the sign industry?
I do.
We love it.
I mean, I love all the good parts.
Yeah.
There are bad parts too, but
it's so good.
I mean, look, the sign industry, industry is great. I mean, tons of creative people that do really, really good work. So,
okay. So you've agreed with that. And yes. Now you've decided you want to start a sign company.
Yes.
You've decided not to run, which was our initial advice. Run far away
from the sign industry.
Yes.
Yeah.
Go back. You decided, no, thank you. I'm staying. Yeah. Okay. So you want to start a sign company.
We, you know, of course, when people sign up for the community Behind the Signs, we always ask questions, before they, join the community. One question is always, if you could ask one thing, that would be helpful to your business, your sign business or your sign career, what would it be? And so we love to get those questions. Matter of fact, as a side note, if you ever have more questions that you would really, especially business related or even technical related, that we can find answers to, send us an email at hello@behindthesigns.com. So H-E-L-L-O at behindthesigns.com, and just title it question, and we will be happy to try to get to as many of those as possible. And
you can
really appreciate that.
Reach out to us just through the Facebook group. We're the admins of the group.
Yep,
so if you ever want to message us on there, we do get those messages.
So today's question came from Alex. Alex was is wanting to get started in the sign industry. So his question was, I want to run my own business, and I was wondering, what is the best way to get started? Number one, how do I register an LLC? So we'll talk a little bit about that. And lastly, what equipment should I buy? Which I think is a loaded question. So Alex, thank you for submitting that question. We appreciate you very much. What do you think, Liz? What's the first thing to start really thinking
about? There's so much when you're starting a business, which is why we're kind of breaking it down. But if we're breaking down this question, I think it's important to just kind of like identify your why, right? Why are you entering this industry? What is it that you have? Mm-hmm. What are you bringing to the table? So why is this it for you? You know, for me, I started Studio Zoe with my husband. That's the short story of a very long story, but I started Studio Zoe with my husband, and our concept was really bringing design back into the sign industry, bringing it, we're a design forward studio. So my background obviously is 100% in signage, growing up in a fabrication shop. Thanks a lot. Anyway, and
have you worked that out with your therapist?
Oh no, she's on retainer. and then, you know, growing up not only in a fabrication shop, but developing relationships with people in that shop that have gone on to start their own companies or work within companies in the sign community in Austin. You know, but for us, our, you know, Russell's background is graphic design, and he worked for a very large corporation and did a lot of, towards the end of his career there, he did a lot of their events or like in-person events. I don't remember what they called them, experiences, I guess, but he'd have to end up doing a lot of signage. Mm-hmm. And what blew his mind as he was working with sign companies, I was not in the sign industry at the time, was that people just didn't, they didn't want to think outside of the box. Mm-hmm. So designers would have this great idea. And I know a lot of you guys right now are going, oh God, designers would have this great idea. And then they'd go to a sign company. The sign company would be like, no, we can't do that. Instead of like, okay, well, I can't do it exactly that way, but let's think about how we can do it. Yeah. And that's frustrating for both people, right? It's frustrating for the person that's designing it, but it's also frustrating for the person who has to fabricate it. And you're like, that's not possible. In comes Liz, who sees it both ways, right? Like, okay, that isn't possible, but we can achieve a very similar look by doing this thing. And in the sign industry, that was hard to come by. A lot of the reason for that was people didn't charge for design. Mm-hmm. You know, back when we started, that really wasn't the norm. And the problem with that is you're spending so much time trying to design these signs. And then what happens if you don't sell it? Well, if you haven't charged for design, you've just wasted all that time. And time is money, baby.
Yeah.
So like for us, we thought, wait a minute, like we can be this middle studio, right? That sits right in the middle of architecture firms, interior designers, with our base of knowledge is design. But then also we know how to fabricate things. We know how it works. So being able to put those two things together, we're able to be kind of the in-between. We speak both languages, right? Mm-hmm. We speak design, we speak fabrication. And so for us, our why was let's bring design back into signage. Let's make it, you know, let's bring it forward, front and center of signage. So that was our why. We saw the need for that to come back into the sign industry. And I think it's just, you know, important to, everyone has a different why.
Yeah.
So what's yours? What was yours?
Mine why was not quite as complicated as yours. My why was I had three kids and I was in college and I was broke. And that was my first jump into being self-employed. I was actually, I mean, to go way back, I was actually cleaning doctor's offices and at night while I was going to school all day. And then, you know, after one of the doctors asked me if I could give a quote in a second office, I realized, oh, hey, this is a great way, being self-employed and being able to be my own boss and to be able to drive my own income, because my income doubled after I gave him a quote on the second office. Well, you know, fast forward, I sold that business, had 100 employees and moved to Texas. And I've kind of fell in love with the marketing side of what I was doing as a janitorial contractor. But, and the freedom that sort of came along with owning my own business. And so I decided I was going to get into advertising. And after applying for a ton of jobs, realizing I had almost very little, well, I had no formal training and my only experience was my own company, I ended up taking a job in sales at a media company, which was actually a dumpy little sign shop. It was a dumpy little sign shop. And I've probably told you guys this story before, but I was there 3 months and there was no organization whatsoever. There were no systems in place. There was nothing. And so I found myself kind of really frustrated trying to figure out the business and figuring out how to get my jobs in. So for me, the why was I already missed owning my own business. And I knew enough about the sign industry to be dangerous. And so I decided that I could do it better if I left there. And I partnered with one of the sales reps there, and we broke off and started our own company called Sign Tech International. And our, you know, I guess my why back then was, and it was a lot of work. I mean, it was so many hours. We were working and calling and selling all day. And then, you know, and then basically at night working on organizational systems and all that. So it was a lot of work. But for me, my why was I just love being self-employed, and I love the creative side of owning my own business. I also love helping people in the community, both as an employer and as a provider of goods and services. So I guess that's my why. That's why I'm passionate about people being successful in the sign industry. Even now with what I'm doing, when I launched Sign Tracker, it was like, how could I help other sign shops do what I did and, you know, be better at what they do, have a system in place that'll help them to train their employees and make their customers happy. So that's always been kind of my why, is I just love small business.
That's awesome. I also want to say that part of my why was that I just don't like being told what to do. And like, bosses really like to tell you what to do. And I've never, as you know, I've never liked that. Don't do well with it. Mm-hmm. So that's okay too. If that's your why, like, it's okay. There's no right or wrong answer here, right? It's just what's motivating you to want to do this. So
let's chat about the first part of Alex's question. I want to run my own business, and I was wondering what is the best way to get started. So
there are so many ways.
There are a lot of ways to get started.
Let's start with the first. It's actually his second question, though. I think identifying your why is a great place to start. But the second part of the question is, how do you register an LLC?
Okay.
First of all, talk to a lawyer. Please, there are so many out there that specialize in small business. Determine if making an LLC is the right choice for you. There are other options, and LLC is a great place to start.
Right.
But just understand the tax implications of that before you get started, especially as an owner. Not a lot of people talk to you about this. Because my background's accounting, I can give you a little bit of insight on it. Not a whole lot. I'm not a CPA. I am an accountant. Those are two different things. And that's because I just don't, like most of you, I don't like taxes. But I do understand them at a little bit deeper of a level than some people. So what I can explain at a very high level is, when you're an owner of an LLC, you are receiving for pay, when you start paying yourself, you're receiving what's called, distribution, guaranteed payments.
Or draw.
So all of those, you're not getting tax taken out of your pay during the year, which can be good, right? Because you can invest that, or it depends on, you know, we have a whole conversation about time value of money. That would make this a very different podcast. However, what's important to note is that you're not getting taxes taken out of your pay. So you really have to understand and put aside a percentage of your pay for taxes, so that at the end of the year, or it come April, you're not like, oh, dang.
Yeah. And
I didn't see that coming.
The other thing to think about just long term is, and if you're an LLC, and this is why it's so important to, you know, if you're going to launch your own business, you got to have a little bit of a nest egg saved up. Part of that nest egg, talk to a lawyer, talk to a CPA, because you need to make sure you do it right. Because in the end, if you end up going years and years and years working off owner draw, you know, that system, again, like you said, it does free up cash as you're going along. You can reinvest it back in the business. But when you sell your business, you're going to have a massive catch-up period. So let me just give you a little shocker here. So if you sold your business for $1 million and you had never really switched to an accrual basis, and this is something you have to plan out long-term and talk to your CPA about, if you never do it, it's fine, but just understand, when you sell your business for $1 million, you're going to write a check for $400,000 plus to the IRS.
So don't freak out.
You're like, oh my gosh, man, I'm just going to keep my day job.
The thing is, like, for example, I own an LLC that's taxed as an S-Corp, right? So I save a little bit in my self-employment taxes. Really, that's all it saves. But that's a huge, that's a good 10%. Like it's not, it's nothing to shy away from. So during the year, as if you're an LLC that's taxed as an S-corp, your pay as an owner is W-2 pay, just W-2 income, just like you pay an employee. It's the same protections as an LLC. So the protection of an LLC in a very general sense, because I'm not an attorney, but the protection of an LLC is really just, it takes away some of the liability from your personal liability. So if something happens with the business and someone sues the business, they can't go after your personal assets. That's the general, the general protection of an LLC. There's more in there. Again, not a lawyer. But the thing to note is when you're taking guaranteed payments as a form of pay from your LLC, also note that you have to pay income tax on the income or profit of the business. So you're getting it's hard to fathom that when you don't own a company.
Right.
And even as an accountant, it was like, I get it, but you don't get it until you get your first $40,000, $50,000 tax bill. And you're like, man, I only made $60,000 this year as my income. Why am I paying $50,000 to the IRS?
So, well, so when you show up for work tomorrow and the owner looks super stressed,
yeah, especially this time of year.
Yeah. And he or she has tears in her eyes, just pat them on the back and say, thanks, boss.
But I think that the point of this is to just say there are options.
Yeah.
And talking to an attorney and talking to a CPA, it's super important. A lot of them will do like a consultation for either very low cost or free sometimes if you find a good attorney or CPA that might be able to go over some of this stuff with you very briefly.
And you're going to need that long-term relationship anyway, because you're going to have things like employee handbooks and there's things that are going to come up.
We're going to get into all that.
We'll get into that
but
later on another
to
episode.
Say, he said,
but how
do I register an LLC?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, talk to an attorney. They're going to help you register. You can register it on your own by going to your Secretary of State website. I wouldn't recommend that. I would always recommend talking to an attorney. It's a lot of paperwork and it's one of those things you want to make sure you get it right. You have your business book, because at the end of the day, especially as a small business, if you're applying for any sort of SBA grants or loans, or if you're applying for hub status or anything like that, you want that business book to be in order because you're in clean. You just need to get it done by someone who knows how to do it. There's lots of different pieces involved. You know, LLC, you have to also register for your FEIN. There are a lot of little steps in there. So it's not overwhelming. Just talk to an attorney and make sure that an LLC is the right option for you, but also then they can help you register that.
So do you think it's important to talk to an attorney if you want to start?
I think you should talk.
Dead horse.
Yeah.
You got to do it. It's just part of your startup costs. So if you're kind of tucking a little money away thinking, I'm going to buy my first printer, I would say, I'm going to talk to my first attorney and then kind of get some of that stuff worked out. So anyway, it seems like it's overwhelming, but really it's not. I mean, millions of people do it. It's just how it works. And so anyway, hopefully you can do it.
You can
absolutely do it. It's not that complicated. Just go talk to somebody. And actually just really fast, if you contact your local SBA, just Google it. There's a local SBA everywhere.
That's
Small Business Administration. So SBA.gov. I know I've had SBA mentors over the years.
Oh yeah.
And they're great and they're free and you can kind of talk through what you want to do and what might be the best setup for you. If you want to kind of dip your toe in the water first before you just drop a few grand on an attorney, start there. That's also super helpful as well.
So helpful. And wow, what a great resource. You know, I forget about it now, but when we started, that was definitely a resource we used.
Me too.
And the nice thing about that, you know, I'd mentioned like Hub, but you can also just register as a small business with your local government. And that's great. for generating leads.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people have to use a certain percentage of either hub status or small business. So like, just as a heads up, if you're starting a business, a sign company, and you aren't a minority, but maybe you're a man starting your sign business with your wife, if she's 51% owner, you can register for historically underutilized businesses. And then you get a lot more lead generation coming in, because companies are required to, especially city and state government, they're required to use a percentage of hub businesses for their contracts. So just another great way to like generate leads. That's kind of going down another rabbit hole. Yeah.
But
okay. SBA, great resource.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the transition a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes it seems, you know, very glamorous, right? To start your own business. And it is. I mean, there's nothing about this talk that we want to be, you know, we don't want to discourage you in any way whatsoever from starting your own business.
We have jokes, but we are both entrepreneurs. Yeah. Like, we just have jokes because it's how you get through the day. And that's our personality. But when it comes down to it, I mean, small business is, that's where it's at.
Yeah.
If it wasn't the sign industry, it'd be something else for me. I would never go back to just working for someone.
Although technically I have my first real job in my life, you know?
Yeah. How has that been for you?
Good. I like it.
Having people tell you what to do.
I mean,
and tell you when your meetings are.
I kind of see myself more as, I do have a lot of meetings. I will give you that. But I kind of see myself more as a collaborator. So I like that. There's still the creative process and what we're doing. And because it's a, even though it's way bigger than Sign Tracker, probably ever would have got to by myself, it is still a very entrepreneurial organization. So yeah. So for me, I feel pretty excited about being part of that. And I'm grateful. Thanks, boss. Anyway, so, okay. but let's, so, you know, so let's talk about that, because, you know, say you're working as, in the case of, again, that podcast we did with Mike Stevens is really excellent. If you guys haven't watched that, please do. But if you have somebody that's either a, you know, designing 40 hours a week or installing 40 hours a week or whatever, they're a project manager, they're working 40 hours a week, and they think to themselves, whatever role you might play in the sign industry, you might think to yourself, okay, I really want to try to do this on my own. You've seen how all the pieces fit together. You've seen in your mind's eye, like how you can improve it. And gosh darn it, you're a likable person and people like you, you know, they're going to come to you and they're going to buy from you. But you got to transition from working 40 hours a week, which already can be kind of exhausting depending on what you do. And then you say, I'm going to jump out and probably have to work technically, whatever my skill set is, whether it's an installer, fabricator, designer, whatever. So as a technician, 40 hours a week. But then outside of those 40 hours a week, I mean, maybe some of it, eventually you'll do some of the stuff inside that 40 hours a week as you grow your business. But then you're going to put the entrepreneur hat on and the manager hat on, and you're going to, you know, go out and figure out how to, you know, grow the business, expand the business, be the visionary, be the creative. And then you're going to have to be the manager. You're the person that has to start developing systems and all that stuff. And by the way, you're still going to be working 40 hours a week doing the thing, what it is that you do. So let's talk a little bit about that.
I think it's important to peek behind the curtain, because not a lot of people think about that. Like,
yeah,
you're working at a business right now, say as an installer. Well, who's getting those jobs?
The salespeople.
Okay.
So now you're going to have to be a salesperson.
Who's coordinating those jobs?
Project manager. So now you have to be a project manager.
Who's ordering the materials?
Inventory person, if you're working at a bigger company, right? And then
who's scheduling them?
Like, manager, but you're right. But then here's the big one.
Pieces.
Who's doing all the accounting?
Oh yeah. Well, that's a whole, and you can outsource that. So
you
don't
could outsource that.
But, there's a lot of hats, and starting your own business, you have to understand those are all your hats now. I still wear a lot of hats. Mm-hmm. When we first started Studiozo, I wore more than I wear now.
And here's the part that's hard. I think too. Like, let's say, for example, you decide you're an installer and you've been squirreling away some money. You put a nice down payment on a, you know, 50-foot crane or whatever, or bucket truck, and you're going to go out and start doing service work or small installs or whatever. And then, you know, you get that first phone call where someone says, you know, and however it is that you start off, right? Maybe you're doing outsourced work for some of your buddies in different sign shops or whatever. And I think that's how Mike said he did it. But you get that first phone call from a potential client that says, "Hey, I need this installed." Mm-hmm. And then you're so overwhelmed, you're doing the work, you're busy, and you're on the phone, you say, "Sure, I can do it, $500. You just throw it off the top of your head, $500. Yeah. What's going to happen there is it seems small, and maybe that happens once or twice, and it probably will. But if you continue to go down that path without stepping back and taking the official time, the real time that you need to do, let me rewind that. Taking the real time to produce an official quote, the time that you need to really calculate materials, labor, you know, travel time, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you're not paying attention to whether you really made money or not on that job. And then you do it again, you rinse and repeat. Then you might find yourself, you know, a couple of months down the road or a couple of years down the road, and you can't figure out why your business isn't successful, why you haven't grown enough to hire people. So these are the kinds of things that you have to think about when you're first jumping ship. Are you ready, right, to work at your skill as the technician and take on the roles of the leadership roles required to be successful? So,
and understand that means working more than 40 hours a week.
Probably working more than
40 hours. For a while. However, I think it's really important to note that while you're doing this, and even though you're the person wearing all of those hats, much like I was, you still need to set up systems. So the thing that has saved me personally is just setting up systems from the very beginning, as if we were a corporate, like a large corporation. I know that's overkill for a lot of people. My background kind of lends to that. So, and so does Russell's. So because of that, we came together and we set up things like a really robust employee handbook with no employees to sign them. We also set up like our folder structure within our drive system, so that every single job is extremely organized. We obviously use SignTracker for a lot of our project tracking, which was very helpful. Now I do end quoting. Yeah, I do have the hookup there, so that's very nice. Yeah. And then we set up, basically we would just write like job descriptions, right? So we would eventually need a production designer, a graphic designer, a senior designer, an art director, and then Russell's our creative director. And for me, we'd need a project manager, a brand manager, an account manager, an estimator, and an accountant. And those are all separate jobs. And when I started, I was wearing all of those hats on the PM side. And because we set up job descriptions, we were and systems behind it, we were able to very easily delegate those tasks once we hired an employee. Now, delegation is also hard because it requires trust, and that's not easy when it's your baby. But like, just literally as of today, this January 2025, I just started training someone in estimating. So I'm you know, preparing to take off another hat. This one's very close to me because that's really how you make your money.
Yeah.
And as the accountant of the business, I don't like people touching my money. Yeah. Like, it's very hard. But I know this person who I'm training has been with us now for years. She's very trustworthy. She's very invested in this business. And luckily, we have a small enough team to really know our team members. But we're taking that hat off. And because there are so many systems set in place, it's easier for me to remove that hat and train her on how to do what she needs to do.
So it does seem like it's overkill to think about having something like that in place if it's just you and you're barely getting one or two jobs in. But the thing is, if you start right from the beginning, even, you know, especially if you're going out and you're knocking on doors and you're trying to drum up business and you get one job, I mean, if things start falling through the cracks, they're going to start right in the beginning. And so, and then that bad habit continues for a long time. So I would highly recommend, you know, getting something in place that can help you take the job, input it into something, how you're going to store and organize your files, and then how that moves through you know, taking that first phone call all the way down to sending out the final invoice, and you'll figure it out. And it, even that might sound overwhelming, you know, I mean, obviously I'm a big fan of Sign Tracker, but there, you know, there's, depending on what you do, there's other tools out there that are also really good. So I'm not going to mention any names because I'm biased, but I'm definitely a proponent of having something in place sooner rather than later, because it's really the reason why I left the company I was at. They just had no systems in place. As an employee trying to make a living as a salesperson, I was really frustrated because it limited my ability to do more. But for you, you know, it's going to, even if you only end up being, you know, you working out of your garage and you have a printer and you just have a select bit of clients, having something in place to track what you're doing, and historical, be able to look at that historical data if that person calls you back and needs a repeat order or whatever. So anyway, that's that on taking on the roles.
Yeah, I do want to say one last thing though.
Sure.
And as a business owner, I hate that I'm saying this. It hurts my heart to say this as a business owner, but as a person that started a business, a lot of these things you can do while you still have a job. Don't make your side hustle your main hustle right away. Like, yeah, it's okay. Don't do it during work hours, right? Don't steal time. That's not okay. But you have time after work, right? If you're working 40 hours a week and you don't have the stress of, I know everyone has stress in their life. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, if you don't already have the stress and responsibility of owning a company, you're going home and you're able to leave your work at work. Go home and start researching these things.
Yeah.
How do I talk to a lawyer? What kind of company is the right company
hook
for me? Hook up with the SBA in your locale. You know, what software do I want to use? Is there a bookkeeper that I could hire on the side?
Right.
Or, you know, what is my niche? What's my why? What am I going? So you have after hours to do that and work on all that. You don't have to jump ship with no plan.
Yeah.
You can still have a job and start to really create this plan for yourself before you take the plunge.
Okay. You said one thing right there. What's my niche? Let's switch to that now too, because
yeah,
you know, obviously if you're starting in the sign industry, there are a million and one ways to skin the cat, right? So, I mean, you could, I'm even learning, you know, I go to a lot of trade shows now. And so, and I love all things t-shirt world. I think I'm just a big t-shirt person.
That's not surprising to me at all.
But since I live in t-shirts and shorts, except it's really cold in here. So I have to wear my jacket.
I know.
That I bought at Costco.
I don't turn my heater on.
So you can't do everything, you know, but there are ways to get to where you want to go and do it slowly. And I think it's picking a niche. Like, for example, and I know most of the folks that listen to this are probably more traditional sign shops, but even I'm learning a little bit more about DTF, right? Direct to film. So you have all these companies that you send them to design. They will put it on this film and you can have a single press and put your t-shirt on. Press it and then sell a dozen t-shirts. And that would cost you almost nothing for that equipment. Or you just design stuff at first and send it to a wholesale manufacturer that does t-shirts and start selling t-shirts if that's your thing, or promotional products or banners or signs or whatever.
I think you bring up a good point with that though. Like, what you're kind of talking about at that point is barrier of entry, right?
Yeah.
Like, what's your barrier of entry? Are you going to buy that film and the equipment needed to press the t-shirts yourself?
Yeah.
Or are you going to outsource those t-shirts?
And so your focus would be order management and design. Mm-hmm. And if you're not a designer, you can even outsource designs. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of firms that just have massive amounts of designers that you can outsource signage design, t-shirt design, mm-hmm. promotional product design. Yeah.
So I know you guys are all listening and saying, why the hell are they talking about t-shirts? It can be anything.
It can be anything.
It's the same.
Yeah. So I think it's a matter of like for you guys, you focused on design, right? So when I started SignTech, We focused on national accounts because for me, that just seemed like a better way to go because I didn't have to worry about local installs. I was subcontracting out the installs. So what we did.
Ah, the days before the Wayfair case.
Yeah.
What a beautiful life.
I mean, what we did was we, when my business partner and I started Scientec International, we decided that we were only going to do national retail chains and channel letters and probably like pylon panels and stuff. But that was all we were going to do. And so we got our first account and then we ended up, you know, we would hire subcontractors all over the country. And then as you're kind of learning to solve the problems, as you're building that first niche, you know, you build systems and forms and all that kind of stuff around it. But, you know, for us, like we were working with a local fabricator that was fabricating and creating the channel letters and then shipping them to installers all over the country that we would subcontract out the survey work, the permit work, and the install work. Mm-hmm. And then we would build a client for all of it and make a little bit of money on the margin. But that we just, that's all we did for the first year.
The thing is, focusing on that niche for a year makes it so much easier to set up systems. Like you really get that down pat.
It did. And then what happened was we started some of our national accounts were installing locations in local retail centers. And so then we, you know, started building slowly but surely relationships with property managers who were referring us to new tenants. And then our local business grew. And then the rest is history. Over 10 years, you know, we grew it to $10 million. So
sure. And for us, our niche, as we already kind of talked about, was design.
Yeah.
Right. And our design goes both ways. We can sell design, you know, signage design to the end user. We can also sell signage design to sign companies that don't necessarily have designers. So we're kind of this middle ground.
So I think
and it was a niche.
Right? Yeah. So I think, you know, depending on what you do or where you guys want to get started, you know, pick a niche and double down on it. A niche?
A niche?
A niche. A specialty. Niche. Whatever.
Niche sounds so much fancier.
It does. Okay. But don't, you can't be all things to all men right off the chute.
No, you can't.
You can't. And it won't, it's, you'll be spread too thin. But if you do,
absolutely.
But you, if you do start to grow, you know, a client base and they're consistently coming back to you, then you can start really expanding your offerings, right? Because then it becomes a lot cheaper to sell more things to the same people than it does to get more people to sell just that one thing. So there is going to be a shift at some point. But if you become really, really good at doing one or two things, maybe banners and yard signs or whatever, then people will start asking. Like there is a friend of mine, and her and her husband, they're up in the Midwest, and they owned a t-shirt shop. They own a t-shirt shop. And they, pretty much that's all they did, t-shirts. They had a bunch of the equipment to do t-shirts, but customers kept asking, hey, can you do banners and yard signs? Mm-hmm. And it was the same, you know, the same customers they already had a great relationship with. And they finally said, sure, we'll do it. And we were talking about it and I gave her some resources on where to outsource that stuff. And so now their business is blowing up. But first it was because they built these, you know, really trusted relationships from their clients to them and vice versa, whatever. But, and then their clients would just, you know, they didn't want to have to deal with other people. They wanted to deal with them. And so that's what I would suggest when you're first starting off, just start small, powerful, start powerful, but start small and do a few things really well, because then people will love you. And people,
well,
I mean,
focus what you do on well. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, at the end of the day, a successful business, yes, it's customer care for sure. Number one. Well, and also making sure you're profitable. That's probably number one, because every customer, I mean, every company does deserve to make a profit, yeah. But you know, but happy customers and just people in general, human beings like dealing with human beings they like, you know? And so, anyway.
You bring up kind of a good point though. And we've touched on it a little bit. We've hinted at it, but we have gotten this question in some form or fashion so many times. You heard me talk about or mention, you know, to Joe, barrier of entry. So it's even part of Alex's question from the beginning, the last part of his question. What equipment should I buy? Okay. I've also heard it as, what's the best printer to buy? what's the best material to use, like what, or to stock up on, what, why is equipment so expensive? It is. And let's just kind of talk about that, because I feel like a lot of people who are starting out, at least the ones that are asking this question, right? They're thinking, I have to buy this equipment in order to start in the sign industry.
Yeah.
Look, can you be an installer without a bucket truck? Okay. Probably not. Yeah. Could you rent one? I don't know.
A lift.
I mean, I feel like that. Yeah. Okay. If you're starting as an installer, there's some basic equipment you will need to invest in. I will highly recommend look into sign companies that are selling old cranes that they're not using, or old bucket trucks that they're not using anymore. They'll probably sell it lower, obviously, than you can get new. Companies sell old, used cranes. So there's definitely different ways to do it.
You can also hang your buddy off the side of a roof with a bungee cord.
Please don't do that. Don't. There was one sign. Sorry, I digress. There was one sign that we did recently where the guys had to rappel off the top of a building to get to it because, like, they weren't sure if the lift could get there. The lift did end up getting there. Spoiler alert. But I watched them rappel on that building, and like the tingles that I felt through my body that were not pleasant tingles were. It was so. I was nauseous just looking at them. And I know that that's very common. It is not what I do. Well, I would never. Like ever do that. But that said, back to what we were talking about. I think it's so important to touch on this because it's how your business started. It's what my business is based on for a lot of ways in the sign industry. So let's talk about brokering.
Yeah. Cause I think, people, like you said, they do think, a lot of folks think that they do have to spend, you know, tens of thousands of dollars buying really expensive equipment. Yeah. And that also comes with the added benefit of having to have the space for it, which adds up to rent a warehouse or whatever. So it really even depends on what you do. Like, for example, let's say you're going to be a vehicle wrap person. Do you know that if you're excellent at wrapping trucks or cars or whatever, that you can order the panels? You know, I know there's several wholesalers that work wholesale with vehicle wrap companies that will print all the panels. They'll number them. You get them shipped to you in a tube. You install them on the car. So you don't have to have that $65,000 printer or whatever to get started. No. Now, you might need a garage or space, a clean space where you can do the actual install. But, you don't necessarily need the printer. So I think it comes down to, first of all, you get your LLC in place, you pick your niche, and then you outsource as much as possible as you're growing your client base, especially if you have some really trusted vendor relationships. And there's lots of different places where you can do that. That's another thing you should invest in if you're getting into this industry. Go to a couple of big trade shows. If you can go to ISA, this year it's in Vegas, coming up in a couple months. It's going
to
be awesome.
If you want to go to the trade show for free, you can sign up at science.org. Science.org.
Yeah.
I should know this.
Yes.
I think it's science.org, the ISA website. You can sign up for the conference if you use code STUDIOZO. That's Studio D as in dog, Z as in zebra, O as in Oscar. And that's also on the group if you need to refer to it, but you get free entry to the trade show.
It's pinned to the top of the group.
It is.
But go to the trade show. If you can kind of convince your significant partner or go alone, but that, hey, this could be a good vacation.
Do you need an excuse to go to Vegas?
Yeah, it's in Vegas. But if you go to a trade show, you go to trade shows, you can look at equipment. And if you are at a point where you can buy a piece of equipment, also go to a trade show because they always have massive show specials. All that equipment they bring to the show and they put on the floor, they don't want to bring it home. So you can tend to get pretty good deals on equipment at trade shows.
That's great advice. But let me tell you, I've been to so many trade shows. I literally can't count anymore.
I can't either.
I mean, I didn't go to as many as you did last year, but I went to more international ones than you did. Anyway, I've never bought a piece of equipment at a trade show. I refuse to own a piece of equipment. There's a big reason for that. Again, grew up in a fabrication shop, so I've seen both sides of this. Yeah. That said, what I do at trade shows is there are so many wholesale vendors where you can buy turnkey signs for them. So even let's say you're a print shop and you want to start getting into exterior signs or some other product that you don't have the equipment to make, but you already have equipment for other things, you don't have to limit your offerings to only what you have for equipment. That's going to limit your income.
I mean, even if you already have a printer and you want to get into doing yard signs and you don't have a flatbed printer,
you can just outsource it. There are wholesale. So you're not outsourcing to someone who's selling it direct to the customer.
And when I say this, wholesalers at ISA for every single thing that you can imagine.
Oh my gosh.
They're there. I mean, from street signs to fancy light poles to, I mean, all the way up to giant LED message centers.
Yep.
If you can think about,
but also
a dream about
signs.
It and sell it.
Yeah. That you and can as do. Someone who has gone to, you'll see them, you know, if you go to ISA, there are a bunch of companies from China that come over too, and they do turnkey work, and I've worked with them. I've visited their shops. Some of them are very reputable. If you see me at ISA, I'd be happy to point out some that I have relationships with. When I say relationships with, I'm not an affiliate in any way. I would just show you who I've seen their work or their working conditions. And I know how they communicate. I know a lot more ins and outs of that than some people do. I've spent a long time over there.
But there's even a lot of, you know, there's even a lot of national and regional and probably even local to you wholesalers
that
you can build relationships with. So the second thing is to go to your local sign association. Mm-hmm. So in the case of like, we're in Texas, Texas Sign Association, Mid-South Sign Association, California Sign Association, Northeast Sign Association. I mean, there's so many of them. Find that. And you go to the ISA website, again, signs.org. If you go to their website, they'll have a list of every single local and regional association there. There's mentorships that are happening there, but also they have small regional shows, almost all of them. And they'll have a couple dozen vendors that are there. Usually there's equipment vendors there, but a lot of wholesalers always show up there. So you'll meet some local, you know, some local folks to you.
I believe if you go back and watch the episode we did with Lori Anderson, who's the president of International Sign Association, she did mention something about how they're starting a program for wholesalers to meet companies that want to broker.
Yeah.
And that's a great resource. I think that event's new. So I know they've always done it with like the Signorama companies that are there, but I think they're starting it for other people too. So,
well, I think it's a big trend in the industry too, because if you get out there and you have that niche, you know, and look, we're not saying that you should never buy equipment. I know that studios. I mean, I had a 60.
Someone has to.
I had a 60,000 square foot plant that had, you know, that had two spray booths, two router tables, you know, welders. I mean, everything. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when FSG took it over and we moved into the bigger space, but you know, I think what's important to know is the right time to buy equipment is when you sit down and really calculate the ROI on that, the return on investment. So let's say you're selling 10,000 yard signs, you know, and you're outsourcing it to this one company. Well, they're making a margin on that sale too. And at some point, if you're doing a volume where it really makes sense, then buy the equipment. Mm-hmm. But you can calculate, you can start to work on calculating that. Your SBA advisor can help you with that, or mm-hmm. even the supplier themselves. Talk to them about, ask some hard questions, you know, get some referrals. I'm going to buy a flatbed printer. Talk to the person that's selling you. They're just going to tell you, this is the greatest flatbed printer in the world because they want to make the sale. But if you start asking them, how many, you know, 18 by 26 inch single-sided yard signs do I need to sell a year to pay for this thing and actually make some money too? Mm-hmm. And then calculate in maintenance and all that kind of stuff. And look, at some point you're going to buy equipment if that's the path you choose. You want to get into manufacturing, you want to have some control over manufacturing. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a lot of things you can do to work on starting a very successful sign shop, and you can do it without having to drop a zillion bucks, right?
Yeah. All yes. Right. You can.
Yes. So we're encouraging.
There's so much that goes into opening a business. It can be overwhelming. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you that it's not overwhelming, but I'm also going to say it's worth it. I mean, the hard work and dedication, it's so rewarding knowing that at the end of the day, yesterday I had a conversation with a partner and he didn't know I was the owner of the business. And he was like, oh, wow. And then before we'd even gotten there, he was saying such nice things about working with my company. And it's so rewarding when you hear that. And he didn't know I was the owner. He was just saying it because he likes our company.
And I would say, look, if nothing else, the takeaway from this, I know we dropped a lot, you know, on you, and some of it that makes you want to maybe feel like you want to, you know, poop your pants a little bit. I just want to encourage you. It is so rewarding. You can do it. Take baby steps. There's going to be just even taking a baby step into owning your own business is actually a giant leap of faith. Mm-hmm. And so we're very proud of you for doing that, but you can do it.
Yeah.
And you have what it takes to do it. You have the skills that it takes to do it. You'll, as long as you're willing to embrace what it means to be a leader and learn about what it means to be a leader, you'll grow in that capacity too. It's challenging, but it's rewarding. I guess lastly, there's a really good book I'd like to recommend to you guys, and it's called E-Myth Revisited. You can get it on Amazon super cheap, but I would get that thing and make it your holy Bible the first few months. But it's by Michael Gerber. It's kind of a standard, but it just talks about all these different roles from technician to manager to entrepreneur and so on. So I think you'll like it a lot. It's a pretty easy read, and I think it'll kind of help clarify some of the things we've talked about today. So anyway, thank you for hanging out with us today. Liz, you got any last thoughts?
Yeah, I think just, if you haven't already, like we said, take the time, listen to the Mike Stevens episode. It was our last episode.
Yeah.
He talks about his experience in starting a sign business, going from going from working in sign businesses for a very long time to owning one now. And then, you know our experiences, but be sure to follow along this year because we're going to keep going through these kind of in smaller baby steps than we did last year.
Yeah.
On how to kind of build up your business and eventually, maybe if we get that far, sell it or step away in some capacity.
Or curse your kids with it. I mean, leave it to your kids.
Precisely. I think it just come back here and follow along this year with us as we talk about this. We're never going to tell you what to do. That's a lie. I'm always going to tell you what to do, but you have a choice in what you do. What I'm going to try more to do is tell you what I did.
Yeah.
And same with Joe. We both have built very successful sign businesses. And we've done it very differently.
Yeah.
Though as we talk about it, there are some similarities. Obviously, I learned almost everything I know from this guy right here, whether it was good or bad. but, you know, we're going to talk to you about our journey through this industry and what we've done. And we do that so that we can give back to you guys because we want to see all of you be successful.
Yes. And we're excited for you. So we're going to sign off for now. Thank you for joining us on today's episode of Behind the Signs. Bye.
Bye.